Welcome. I am Ellie McCann, Extension Educator with the University of Minnesota Extension and a member of the Military Families Learning Network Transition Team. The goal of the Military Family Learning Network Family Transitions Concentration Area is to support military family service professionals as you work with military service members and their families as they navigate transitions across the life course. In this podcast, we are focusing on the issue of elder family financial exploitation, an emerging health, financial, and social crisis occurring across the United States. Just like other types of abuse in families, elder family financial exploitation not only impacts older victims, but often has a ripple effect on the elder's family system, impacting relationships, functioning, and well-being across the generations. Professionals working with military families are ideally positioned to learn about and recognize potential financial abuse and take action to respond appropriately. Our guest today is Marlene Stumm, a professor in the Department of Family Social Science at the University of Minnesota. Marlene is nationally recognized for her research and education on family economics and gerontology. Her work includes collaboration with the Minnesota Elder Justice Center and involvement in a multi-state research project to understand and address elder family financial exploitation. She is currently leading a research project listening to the voices and perspectives of family members impacted by elder family financial exploitation, addressing a major gap in what's known. Please note that throughout the interview, we will be referring to elder family financial exploitation as EFFE. Marlene, could you please begin by sharing a definition of elder family financial exploitation?
Thanks, Ellie. I will start with helping people get a sense of what we're talking about with elder financial exploitation. There's a widely recognized definition that goes as follows. It's the illegal, unauthorized, or improper use or withholding of an older person's financial assets or personal property. What we know is that in a majority of financial exploitation cases, it's a family member who's the perpetrator or person doing the exploiting, not a stranger. This means that EFFE takes place in the context of often trusted and close relationships within families, typically between an older parent and an adult child, or it can also be a younger family member, such as a grandchild, niece, or nephew. So once again, EFFE involves a family member who's using or withholding an older person's financial assets or personal property in ways that are illegal, unauthorized, or improper.
What are some examples of elder family financial exploitation?
EFFE comes in many different shapes and sizes, from the very subtle to the quite explicit. Let me share a couple of examples. Here's one from a recently reported case. In this case, an 82-year-old World War II veteran had suffered two strokes and was confined to a wheelchair and homebound. After his wife passed away, he needed help, so he bought a mobile home and asked his daughter to move in with him. He also named his daughter to be his agent under a power of attorney and added her to the title of the home and his bank accounts. The daughter then isolated her father and took complete control over his money. When the elder sought help, he believed he had $30,000 in savings, but only $15 remained in his accounts. Bank records revealed that his daughter had taken his money for her personal use, had opened and charged thousands on his credit cards in his name, and purchased a new car using her authority with her dad as a cosigner. Another EFFE example could present itself in this way. A 46-year-old Army Reserve Service member is preparing to be deployed for 9 months. In addition to leaving a husband and a 19-year-old son, Susan, the Army Reserve member, is extremely distraught about her 72-year-old mother's current and future quality of life. In this case, Susan lives across town from her mom and helps her out weekly. She has noticed that her mom has not been herself and has had trouble making decisions since the death of her husband, or Susan's dad, about 9 months ago. When Susan was recently helping her mom with bill paying, she noticed that $50,000 checks had been made out to each of her two brothers. In addition, her mom mentioned that the brothers had her sign some papers to update her will and name them as power of attorney. Susan's mom wasn't really sure what the changes meant, but said she trusted her sons. Susan was pretty appalled at hearing all of this and suspects that her brothers are working together to drain their mother's fairly significant assets for their own benefit. Now what can she do, particularly that she's going to be away for 9 months?
What are some common approaches used by EFFE perpetrators?
There's a variety of common methods that perpetrators can use. For example, one can involve using an elder's funds for the perpetrator's own personal gain without permission. It can involve stealing money or property. In some cases, perpetrators use force, coercion, or undue influence to change a will or trust for their own gain, getting an elder to add a name to an account or a deed to a home, or manipulating to receive excessive gifts, such as money or possessions. In other cases, EFFE involves misusing a power of attorney. A power of attorney document is often encouraged to help adults manage their legal and financial transactions in the event that that adult becomes incapacitated or needs some assistance. It allows a person to select an agent or attorney in fact, who then has the legal authority and duty to act in the elder's best interest. The challenge is when that power of attorney misuses that authority for their own personal gain. It's also important to recognize that EFFE is seldom simple. It can involve more than one elder, such as both parents if they're living. It can involve multiple perpetrators, a variety of family members working together for mutual gains. EFFE does not always occur in isolation, but can take place along with other types of abuse, such as neglect, emotional, physical, or sexual abuse. In addition, EFFE takes place in the context of often a long and complex family history of entitlement, expectations, and obligations about who gets what resources, such as money, housing, and possessions, across the generations, particularly, again, from old aging parents to adult children.
How common or prevalent is EFFE?
I wish I knew the answer to that question, as do most people. There are actually 7 recognized types of abuse impacting older persons. Of those 7 types, financial abuse is widely recognized as the most commonly reported type of abuse. We know that financial abuse knows no boundaries. It crosses all types of families, regardless of socioeconomic status or cultural background. That said, there are no good sources of data to indicate how common or prevalent EFFE really is. A great deal remains unknown. There is consensus, however, that what's known about EFFE is really only the tip of the iceberg, leaving much of the problem invisible, unreported, and unaddressed. Many barriers and challenges exist to recognizing and responding to EFFE. And that's why professionals such as yourself can play such a critical role in helping uncover what's under that tip of the iceberg.
What are some steps that professionals can take to help recognize and detect EFFE?
Well, first of all, recognize that there isn't one legal definition of EFFE or elder abuse that applies in all 50 U.S. states. Because of this, it's essential to first learn how EFFE is defined in the state context in which you are working. Begin with a visit to the National Center on Elder Abuse website, where you can search state-specific resources, including direct links to statutes. Create a bookmark for the National Center on Elder Abuse, as it's going to offer valuable resources as you address this issue. While there are many commonalities across states in defining what EFFE is and elder abuse more broadly, there's also some pretty unique and specific differences in how elder abuse is defined and how financial exploitation is defined. In many states, laws are designed to protect against the maltreatment of vulnerable adults, regardless of age. Definitions of who's vulnerable also differ across states, but in general refer to adults who lack decision-making capacity, the ability to understand the consequences of their actions, or adults who may be receiving some type of assistance with daily living activities. It's important to recognize that age alone, or being 65 plus, does not automatically make a person vulnerable or incapable of making informed financial decisions. Once you understand state-specific definitions of EFFE, take time to learn about potential cues and/or red flags to watch for when you're interacting with family members. Keep in mind that you might be hearing about EFFE experiences from the perspective of an elder victim. It could be the perpetrator who's talking to you, or a non-perpetrator in the family. Numerous resources identifying red flags and warning signs can be found at the National Center on Elder Abuse website. Another must-read is available online, and that is a MetLife-sponsored study called Broken Trust, Elders, Families, and Finances.
What ethical and legal responsibility do professionals have when EFFE is suspected?
Great question. While many professionals might be familiar with responsibility for reporting child abuse or domestic violence, abuse of vulnerable adults often presents responsibility that practitioners are simply not familiar with. Legal responsibility to respond to EFFE is determined by specific mandated reporting laws and practices in the state in which you work. Begin by learning who is defined as a mandated reporter and under what conditions or circumstances. A search of your state-specific adult protective services or the National Center on Elder Abuse website and their state-specific resources are the best source to begin with finding this information. It's common for mandated reporters to go beyond healthcare and law enforcement practitioners to include a range of people likely to interface with family members. For example, as an educator and researcher, I am a mandated reporter for vulnerable adult maltreatment in Minnesota. Mandated reporting processes typically maintain confidentiality to encourage greater reporting and protecting reporters from litigation related to the reporting. Keep in mind that reporting EFFE typically does not require extensive training or experience. Don't let that stop you. In most cases, states have expectations that reporters simply need to have sound suspicions, but not hard evidence, complete certainty, or firsthand knowledge of the exploitation. In addition to understanding if you are a mandated reporter, determine if your employer has written or unwritten expectations or policies in regards to EFFE. Given the overall lack of awareness of elder abuse, policies and procedures may need to be initiated and developed to clarify responsibilities in your work setting. And even if you're not legally a mandated reporter, your employer and or your profession may recommend an ethical responsibility to take action. No matter what, if EFFE is occurring and you feel it's serious, threatening, or dangerous, call 911 or the local police to get immediate help for the elder victim.
Assuming that recognizing and responding to EFFE is within my professional responsibility, what else do you feel I need to know to be able to respond?
Well, as most situations, the field of elder abuse has its own unique intervention, professionals, and state-specific structures that you need to get to know. So to help you respond appropriately, I really encourage you to develop a resource and referral list that reflects your state-specific structures and key players. Again, a good place to begin is the National Center on Elder Abuse website, as it already has gathered lists of key resources for each state. In addition, visit your state-specific Health and Human Services website to identify more contacts. At the state and local level, adult protective service agencies investigate reports of suspected abuse in situations where the vulnerable adult is not able to protect themselves, and that includes financial exploitation. If the client agrees to accept help, APS, Adult Protective Services that is, can arrange for services to secure their safety and meet their basic needs. APS can also refer cases to law enforcement or district attorneys for criminal investigation and prosecution. Keep in mind that the criminal system focuses on stopping criminal behavior, protecting the victim, and punishing the perpetrator. While EFFE cases may not always meet criminal standards, they can also be pursued with a private attorney in the civil court system. In the civil system, the focus is on stopping the problem, preventing additional losses, and ideally recovering resources when it's possible.
Marlene, are there normal or expected transitions that families experience that can increase the risk of EFFE?
There are some major life transitions that can often provide a window of opportunity for financial exploitation to occur. These windows of opportunity can increase the risk of EFFE, especially when they're combined with a motivated abuser or a family member who can justify or rationalize their abusive behaviors. Let me share some examples of transitions that you can pay attention to when you're interacting with family members. One key risk factor or transition is changes in health, whether physical and or mental, which can put an elder at risk of financial decision-making incapacity and often increasing dependence on others for care and support, and can mean increased isolation. All of these are risk factors for experiencing EFFE. Along with those changes in health, often comes the need for caregiving for aging parents or in-laws. We know that family members provide a majority of care for older members, and that's great. However, some caregivers may feel entitled to be rewarded financially or deserving of possessions. Dependence on others for care and support is one risk factor for EFFE. When those caregivers decide, again, that they may want to take things or be rewarded for that caregiving. Another transition that is a risk factor is when an elder loses a spouse. Again, that can increase dependence, depression, isolation, all combined with the need to make major financial and resource decisions. Another transition that we see as a risk factor is the change that you can have in your ability to manage money and financial decisions. Too often, adult kids overestimate a parent's ability to manage their finances and are unaware of decision-making challenges an aging parent or in-law may have. Too often, money is secretive, and the challenges in raising difficult conversations about money, especially between aging parents and adult children, can create, again, that window of opportunity for someone else to come in and take advantage of that situation. Another major transition that affects EFFE is when a family member's economic well-being poses a risk. In this case, it's not so much the economic well-being of the elder we're talking about, but it's the economic well-being of the perpetrator, who may be motivated by economic need or wants, greed, or the need to support addictive behaviors. It's known that perpetrators are more often unemployed, recently divorced, and in transition in their living situation. In these cases, all of these risks can mean increased dependency on an older parent for financial and housing support, and allow that opportunity for financial exploitation. And finally, there are some normal later life transitions, such as downsizing, moving, preparing for one's death, and the transfer of a lifetime of accumulated money and possessions. They can also present opportunities for greed, manipulation, coercion, and acting on feelings of entitlement.
This has been extremely informative. Marlene, do you have any final messages that you'd like to share?
Well, just in summary, let me say that as a field of study, what's known about elder abuse and EFFE specifically lags decades behind that of child abuse and domestic violence. That's not a good thing to have to say, but we continue to learn that families will never be the same after experiencing EFFE. The impact of EFFE goes well beyond the elder victim. There are also lots of ripple effects on the elder's family system. EFFE forever changes family relationships, family functioning, and individual health and well-being. The stress involved in seeing an aging parent suffer and live with broken ties can have major long-term consequences on the health and well-being of all family members. I encourage you as family service professionals to recognize and respond to EFFE. Doing so can really make a difference in the well-being of family members as they deal with transitions across the life course.
Marlene, you have given us so much to think about. I want to remind our listeners about the resources that you have mentioned. First, the National Center on Elder Abuse website has lots of great resources. The second resource mentioned was a MetLife-sponsored study called Broken Trust, Elders, Families, and Finances. And of course, people are encouraged to connect with their state-specific adult protective services to learn more about laws and procedures within their state. Marlene, thank you so much. We appreciate you spending time with us to talk about this important topic. We invite our listeners to comment on this podcast or the elder family financial exploitation topic by leaving a reply at the bottom of our podcast page. This is Ellie McCann with the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions Concentration Area. You can learn more about us and find additional podcasts, webinars, and blogs at our website. Thank you for spending time with us today.